so serious.
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game? Yeah!
Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, it's time for another episode of the Toy Department. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. And I got to say, you know, I don't know if it's the current environment, you know, with politicians body slamming reporters and whatnot. But you and I starting today on an argumentative foot.
It was spicy this morning.
That's
just because I was tired. I literally woke up to a text message. We can have a whole separate conversation about my like desperate, deep-seated FOMO that won't let me sleep with my phone sounder off. But yeah, you woke me up with a text, and I got spicy. I apologize.
I think maybe my surprise comes from the fact that like a text wakes you up. Are you like a super light sleeper?
I'm a pretty light sleeper once I get near the morning, you know?
Okay.
And I'm one of those people that has trouble like going back to sleep if I'm awakened.
Yeah, you sound like a light sleeper. Which
makes it... Say again?
I said, yeah, you sound like a light sleeper.
Well, I sleep pretty well in the middle of the night, though. It's weird. I don't know. And but
you can send me like 100 texts at any hour of the day, and if I'm asleep, I'll stay asleep.
I just also have a loud, somewhat jarring text alert.
Oh, well, maybe do something about that.
No, I love it. It's one of my favorite things in my life is my text alert. Do you not know what my text alert is?
I don't know what your text alert is.
It is E-40 from the song, I think it's Record Fakers, the song where he name checks Rasheed Wallace, and it's just E-40 going, Rasheed Wallace!
That's the most you thing I think I've ever heard. So, you know, exacerbating this is that, like, there's, you know, we have a time difference. So for me, like, I'm well into the middle of my day and being bothered about 100 things. And I actually was going to text you earlier, and I was like, you know, I'll wait till, like, 9-ish. That seems like a reasonable time to send someone a text.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand how it seemed reasonable, but we all learned something today.
Right. Anyway, so we fought about that, and I think maybe we'll fight about another text that you sent me.
I don't know why. It's pretty non-controversial.
It's basically, I don't know, Saturday, Sunday, you're like, so you ready to apologize to Brad Stevens yet? And my answer to that is, oh, hell no. Hell no, I'm not ready to apologize to Brad Stevens. First of all, I never said Brad Stevens can't coach.
I believe what you said was Brad Stevens is the worst coach I've ever seen. I've never seen anything so awful in my life. I don't know. We could try to find the tape, but I'm pretty sure that's what you said.
My whole point on Brad Stevens was, hey, can we maybe just hold off on the coronation yet? This guy hasn't won a playoff series. Now, he's done that. He's done that. And I did predict that the Celtics would not make the Eastern Conference Finals. But I would also say in my defense, they were having a whole lot of trouble with the Bulls before Rondo got hurt, and then edged out the Wizards in 7. So it wasn't like I was like way off on the idea that the number one seed might have some problems here in the playoffs. And then they're, you know, look, you can talk about Isaiah, but they were not going to be in this Cleveland series. I think can we agree on that at least?
Look, we can agree. Yes, we can agree. The Celtics were not going to beat the Cavaliers in the Eastern Conference Finals, but they ought not have a shot. They ought not have won a game, especially not without Isaiah Thomas. And I think when you look back, you have to also consider with Isaiah Thomas hurt, and we could see he wasn't at 100%, but they were significantly less talented than the Wizards.
They are. But here's the thing I sort of disagree with, because everyone is like, oh my God, you know, oh, without Isaiah, like, and this is not I'm not trying to knock Isaiah at all. And it may sound like this when I say this, but like, Isaiah's offense is irreplaceable, but his defense creates a couple of problems for the Celtics, right? One, he's just, you know, he's 5'7". So there is that. But also, because he's 5'7", right, they can't really play, and they need his offense, they can't really play the Bradley Smart backcourt at the same time, which is an outstanding defensive backcourt. So that problem goes away.
All of the things
that problem
that you're
goes
saying.
Away when Isaiah Thomas goes out, which is part of how they were able to come back in that game. They also got a lot of luck and an all time stinker game from LeBron. You know, to
and
get
an all time superhero game from Marcus Smart. I understand that. I'm not giving Brad Stevens full credit. I'm just saying, I think he certainly deserves some credit, and he certainly has been the standout coach in the Eastern Conference, wouldn't you say? If there is one, I mean,
if you're asking me, has he been better than Scott Brooks and Fred Hoiberg to date? Yeah, he has. But
and
I mean,
Tyronn Lue,
congratulations.
Tyronn Lue came out of Game Four saying, "Man, in Game Three and the beginning of Game Four, we really had trouble adjusting to the stuff they were running without Isaiah Thomas."
Okay, and now, yes or no? In your mind, is Tyronn Lue a great coach?
I'm not saying he is, right, but I do think that the fact that he's bamboozled by what Bradley Stevens was able to do with significantly lesser talent should give you an indication that Stevens is pretty good.
I'm not saying that I give Brad Stevens no credit. I'm just saying we've given this guy all the credit before anything's really happened, and that bugs me. And therefore, I don't think I owe an apology.
Okay, but if you're going to say, well, Tyronn Lue's not that good anyway, let's talk about where Tyronn Lue probably ranks in the league.
That's a great question,
because
actually.
What I'm saying is,
I put him in the upper third of coaches.
Exactly. So, and Brad Stevens, I think, has acquitted himself in a way that makes him seem significantly better. So you're talking about guys better than Brad Stevens is a list of five or less people. That makes him pretty damn good for, what, a fourth-year NBA head coach?
Maybe.
Apologize.
Hell no. Are you one of the people that feels like the playoffs have been dull?
Yes and no. I mean, yes, undeniably, there have been less competitive series than you would want.
Yeah, I think non-competitive is a better word than dull. There's a reason these games are getting good ratings, you know what I mean? Like, they're still watchable.
Yeah, and I do want to make sure we don't forget that within the morass of blowouts have been a handful of exceptional games. There were two or three games in the Grizzlies-Spurs series that were exceptional. There were two or three games in the Boston Wizards series that were exceptional. Even a couple of those Bulls Celtics games early on were pretty exciting. So there have been games, but no, certainly, like, overall, it's been a less competitive playoffs than I think a fan would ideally want.
I guess the whole season's just been waiting for the, you know, for these two teams. So
right.
wait another week. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I hear the people who don't like that, but also, like, it's been a 3-year build to this moment that we're finally approaching. So if a few playoff series are a little less competitive to get us relatively healthy on both sides to the finale of the trilogy, like, that's what everybody wants, isn't it?
Yeah, except that, is it the finale of the trilogy, or is it the third in the trilogy? Or not even the trilogy.
The third in a series. I mean, we'll see. But there's a lot that's going to happen this offseason. And the fact that Boston is doing what they are doing without Isaiah Thomas. Because I think the Game 4 performance, I mean, look, LeBron and Kyrie are capable of going nuclear at any time in any game. And obviously, if they do that, Boston has no chance. But the fact that the Celtics came into that game and, you know, led for much of it and competed down the stretch, I think that should be encouraging for them in a broad sense. Not, again, they're not winning the series, but it should be a thing where they go, look, we have our best offensive player on the sidelines, and here we are competing with the Cavaliers. If we have our best offensive player back and whatever we get out of the first pick and potentially a trade or two to make with valuable future picks, I think you could create a scenario where Boston can compete. I think if the Wizards can bolster their bench, you can create a scenario where they can compete with the Cavaliers. Because the Cavs are I'd have to do a little more research, but unless I'm mistaken, they're sort of locked into what they are, which is Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving, and then we're going to not be able to spend too much money to fill in the rest of the team because we're paying the top three guys so much.
Well, first of all,
and the Warriors, by the way, are in that situation as well.
A little bit.
They are. I mean, they're probably not going to be able to pay Ian Clark. And if Andre Iguodala comes back, it's only going to be because he takes a huge discount to come back.
Yeah, but you're talking about a cap in a hard way, particularly in Cleveland's case. Like, LeBron's just going to make him spend over the cap. It was part of his condition for coming back. If they need
but
to spend,
they can't,
they'll spend.
They can't just go sign guys over the cap. They can't just go sign a big money player. It's not that easy. And if they make a trade, salaries have to match. So it's not as easy in the NBA as it is in baseball to just go get another guy. Like the Giants can go spend another $100 million every offseason if they want to.
Well, yeah, of course, there's no cap in baseball. But I mean,
they can spend more, but again, they have to do it the way they did it this year with adding guys like Deron Williams and
Kyle Korver, they made a lot of additions during the season.
That's right, but none of them are really significant.
Yeah, but I would say they're significant in that when you compare them to, say, Washington, they now have a much deeper team, and they may not have had that at the start of the year.
No, I agree, but that's my point, is Washington has more money to spend in making
those
moves.
But you're also giving the brightest timeline in terms of a Celtics future in that case.
Well, and in terms of a competitive Eastern Conference, I am giving the brightest future, and sad to say, that future also includes decline, which, although there have been no signs, I feel is inevitable at some point with LeBron.
But
challenging the Warriors, it really is.
And I would say, look, you've got – when you look at the Celtics in particular – Isaiah Thomas is a serious injury that a lot of players some players come back from, but many do not. He's also approaching 30.
If they don't sign him. And I think we're seeing the skeleton. The Celtics are the opposite of the Cavs or the Warriors.
Right.
Or,
they have ultra flexibility, but that doesn't mean they're going to choose the right things.
Of course, is what
I'll say.
Of course not. They have a decent track record.
Hayward going there is not fait accompli by any means. It's possible, but it's not.
It is weird how everyone talks about that like it's already happened.
And
we're talking about millions of dollars he'd be leaving on the table.
Yeah, like the Celtics problem, and God, sorry, I'm picking on Isaiah today. The Celtics problem is they're not good enough at the top, right? Like they don't have the A guy, right? That, in a series against Cleveland.
They certainly could in 2 months. That's the point.
In 2 months? You think Hayward's that guy?
I think
Hayward's like Al Horford. Like, he's a very good player, but you want him as your third option.
Markelle Fultz might be that guy.
We
don't know.
Right.
The point
that's what I mean. That's why I'm saying it's the brightest version of that timeline.
It is a bright version, but again, by the rationale you're using, any team in the NBA getting good ever is a bright timeline. I mean, you have to do it right. But the Celtics are in position to come up in a way that teams rarely are.
Yes. If you're talking about, they are a team who is already good and getting a number one draft pick.
And has flexibility to make major additions from a veteran standpoint as well. I mean, they really are positioned as well as they possibly could be. They have the number one overall pick and roster flexibility.
Hey, remember when the Detroit Pistons were coming off a couple championships and had the number two pick?
They drafted Darko. I know.
With LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Carmelo. So, I'm just saying, yes, it could go that way, and it could also not go that way. So, but we know what Cleveland is, and even if they don't get better, we know where they're at. And nobody's come close to their level so far. And, maybe someone will challenge them, but this could also go on for a couple more years with both of these teams. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, and on the other side, and this might be just recency bias or proximity bias, but I don't know who challenges the Warriors, and I don't know how you do it.
Yeah. Well, look, the Spurs could get better because they're the Spurs and they do things.
Okay, you're right.
Could happen. The Rockets could get better, but you're right.
Like, in order to challenge the Warriors, I think the Spurs would have to move on from LaMarcus Aldridge. I don't think you can pay a guy that much if he's going to be what LaMarcus Aldridge is in a playoff situation against the Warriors specifically. So I think they have a lot of roster work to do if they want to challenge the Warriors. I don't know that the Rockets would have to pretty much remake their team around a couple of guys.
You feel like the Rockets ceiling with Harden.
I think the future of the Timberwolves is more truly dangerous, or like the in the West, I don't know who else it would be, is more truly dangerous to the Warriors, unless somehow like the Pelicans make some sorts of genius moves to put around those two big guys, because the big guys could at least play the Warriors a different way. But like the Rockets as currently constituted, even though I thought they had a, you know, way odds off chance to give the Warriors a bit of a run if they had faced them just from a scoring perspective, like, you can't really look at that roster and construct a scenario where they have a legitimately good chance to be better than the Warriors.
Yeah, but they do have a GM that's willing to make some bold moves. And
that's what I'm saying. They'd have to really blow things up.
I don't know if they have to blow things up. I think the concept of surrounding Harden with shooters.
Yeah, they need different.
I think you could do that. You just need to, you know. I don't know if that's reached the ceiling. And then, you know, we left out the Bucks, I think, in the Eastern Conference.
Well, they're
discussion.
In the East, yeah. So they certainly could challenge the Cavaliers, depending on what happens with Giannis. And look, what if Chris Paul is on the Bucks next year? Right. What if Kyle Lowry is on the Bucks next year?
Yeah. What if Jabari Parker becomes healthy at some point? You know what I mean?
Yeah. If Jabari Parker's healthy, you've got Greek Freak, Kyle Lowry, Jabari Parker, Malcolm Brogdon, Chris Middleton. That's a good team.
Yeah. All right, we went way long on Brad Stevens and somehow got to the whole NBA.
Basketball in general. But I think, you know, here's a takeaway from this like post-Brad Stevens portion of this conversation. You may not have loved this playoffs. The NBA is in a great place right now. A great place. And even if the Warriors do project to be better than everybody for the next few years, like, that's not the first time that's happened, and that is not bad for basketball.
People really like watching the Warriors and the Cavaliers. I'm one of those people. So,
it's
what I mean?
Great matchup. And I'll say
I don't mean playing against each other. I mean, I think they just like watching those two teams play basketball against whoever.
Well, yeah, no, it's true. Look, LeBron is generational. If he's not the greatest player of all time, he's in the top three. And this Warriors team is maybe, you know, they've got work to do. But is it so crazy to think they could end up going down as the best team of all time? It's not. It's really not.
Yeah, I mean, they certainly had the best. It really is all riding on these finals for the Warriors, right? You're now talking about the best 3-year regular season stretch in history.
Yeah, they have to win this final.
Yeah,
though.
Like if they come out of that with, with one finals win,
that is subpar.
That's bad. But, you know, they're the Atlanta Braves.
Shots fired from a Braves fan.
Man, it hurts. But if they, you know, if they come out of it with two out of three, then it looks very different. And you know,
especially when here's the thing: you win this year's finals, and we'll always look back and say, "Boy, short one Draymond Green suspension, they might have won 3 in a row or 5 in a row or whatever it ends up being." Right?
You know what they're not going to say, and I know we need to move on, but I'm just going to say this now: they're not going to say, "It's cheap. It's Kevin Durant tarnished his legacy by winning this cheap title."
No,
I guarantee you that's not a thing people are going to say. And yet, I see that on the internet all the time, as if we don't have the recent LeBron with the Miami Heat case to remember that that's not how it goes down.
We'll stop following Skip Bayless on Twitter.
Yes, you're right. Skip will be saying that no matter what happens. No matter what. Like, this is a win-win for Skip because he's going to have his
He's crushing the winner no matter what happens.
Yeah, he's got his line of attack ready to go. All right, so the other thing that we nearly came to blows about today was The Handmaid's Tale. And that was my fault. I said I was going to watch The Handmaid's Tale last night, and I made an executive decision that I didn't feel like I had fully absorbed all of the last Fargo as I started watching Fargo. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go back and watch Fargo so I can.
Well, look, I'll say normally I wouldn't care, except that I specifically
stayed up late to watch The Handmaid's
Tale. Stayed up late to watch extra Handmaid's Tale because I had already seen, as you knew, the premiere, which you had not even watched by today. Yes.
So I did take an hour out of work.
What?
To watch The Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, you're such a professional.
So I've seen it, and good Lord. Wow. You know, it's... I get... You know,
a lot. Yeah, it's a lot.
It's a lot. And there, people have kind of given you this warning. If you've heard anyone talk about this show, it's on Hulu, by the way, that it is a lot, and it's really heavy. And all of those things are true. And I think particularly... There's a lot in the modern world that you sort of wind up thinking about, and certainly, like, you know, there are so many echoes of the way that we treat religion and really more Puritanism, I would say, than just religion.
Fundamentalism.
Fundamentalism, yeah. And, you know, femininity. And it's – yeah. I really enjoyed the show, and it really bummed me out at the same time.
I do legitimately think, and this is the first time I think I've really felt this, other than obviously stuff that is directly related. I think this show feels so different than it would have 6 months ago.
Yeah, in a way.
Or maybe a year ago.
In a way, it's like it's almost like the reverse Veep. If this makes sense, in that like Veep has this problem funny. In that politics is just too crazy now for Veep to parody.
Exactly. Veep was funny when politics were stable.
Yeah, right. This show kind of maybe goes beyond where the current situation is. You know what I mean?
Way beyond. But, obviously, yes. It goes way beyond. But given the current situation,
you can see it from there. Yeah, you
it's
know,
it's more unsettling than it would have been a year ago when I think the current situation would have been unthinkable.
Yeah. So yeah, it does sort of have that effect that I would have to assume was unintended, given production schedules and whatnot on a thing like this. But
right, I mean, and that's an interesting question because I do think it's easier to watch this show as a complete fantasy when. It's President Obama, and we've, you know, progressivism has had wins on gay marriage and on, you know, just a lot of positive things, especially as it regards the sexes.
Right.
And then this, you know,
yeah, and you're thinking, hey, we might have a woman president, you know,
right? Yeah. And then all of a sudden, a guy whose own wife doesn't want to be around him and who's just a disgusting pig all right. at all times.
I'm going to bring you back into the toy department.
Sorry. I'm sorry. Okay. But honestly, like, it's, objectively, this president is not as – does not treat women as well as our previous president, objectively. So it – The threats that I think many people assumed were of a bygone day, threats of that nature to women's rights make this show a tougher watch.
Yeah, women's rights and women's just women's roles in a way. Yes. You know what I mean? Women's
and just
place,
respect for women.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the training scenes with Ann Dowd from The Leftovers. Are just in that first episode, they're just so those were so tough to watch. All of
them.
Let me ask you. So you've been watching a little Top of the Lake now, right? You've been watching
which, by the way, is another show that is. It's not like this. It's not like Handmaid's Tale, but it's intense, man.
Yeah, it's in the darkness. Are you all on board with Team Elizabeth Moss now at this point?
I mean, I get it. I get it. I get it. I don't know that I'm ready to crown her ass, but But I get it. She's great.
I think she is riveting in Handmaid's Tale. And she is. I feel like,
she's incredible.
Like a lot of the show, at least a lot of the pilot, just kind of really turns on that. You know what I mean? Like it needs her presence and just the, you know, kind of her watchability in this unbelievably tough role to kind of
hold this
heft up, you know?
And I think in a lot of ways, well, Top of the Lake has more characters that I feel that way about. There's a lot of like electric presences on the screen in that show. But I will say these are not two shows to watch to show the great range of Elizabeth Moss.
That's fair.
That's fair. Nothing to do with her ability or success in either role. It's just the tones of the shows are similar. You know, single shots on a confused and upset Elizabeth Moss are not altogether different.
She really nails that. And
she sells those, man. She really does. She sells facial emotion in difficult situations. Some actors, even pretty good ones, you catch them with a tight shot in an emotional situation and it's a little bit
yeah.
And she brings those home.
That's part of my Charlie Hunnam thing. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, he can't seem to do that.
He's great from a distance.
Yeah, exactly. He's a Monet. Yeah. Part of the range thing with her, though, I think comes from having watched Mad Men. You know what I mean? Right? Like, if you're coming into that knowing Peggy Olson, who just as a single character has a tremendous amount of emotional range, but is so different from these roles. You know what I mean?
Yes, and I watched most of the first season. So even though I don't know the long-term emotional roller coaster of Peggy, I recognize she played a very, very different character in that. And I've seen her in like a movie, I think, as well. Look, I'm not saying she has no range. I'm just saying these two roles
are similar.
Are not a display of her range. I get it. I get it with Elizabeth Moss. I think this... Elizabeth Moss is the greatest television actress of our time. Consensus is a little bizarre, but that's fine. Things like that happen.
She's building up a pretty strong resume, though. You know what I mean? Like, if you want to say crown her ass or not, like this is a pretty strong set of television shows she's been in.
Okay, but I mean, how much comedy gets so disrespected in these conversations? That's always part of my problem. Like, I'll take Aubrey Plaza.
Love Aubrey Plaza. I got nothing bad to say about Aubrey Plaza.
I know. I'm just saying the consensus to me is bizarre. It's not. Elizabeth Moss has done nothing wrong. she seems to be a truly wonderful actress, and I'm appreciating watching her in both of these darkly and strangely intense television shows that I'm now watching. I want respect given to some of our other great television actresses.
You feel like she's hogging all the credit?
Yeah. That's all. That's all it is.
I feel like most of America has no idea who she is.
Hendricks like blew up early on Mad Men, but I feel like she's now slept on.
She is now slept on. Because the Christina Hendricks blowing up thing was, here is a woman who is A, smoking hot, and B, smoking hot in a way that's different than we're used to, and I think that was a big part of that phenomenon. Now, as she's grown, you know, sort of from a body of work standpoint, you can see that she's a very good actress. You know what I mean?
Excellent.
It's not just about that, but I think most people's initial reaction to that was more, you know, was initial reaction to that Mad Men character was about, whoa, this is a smoldering sex pot, you know, in this kind of like old school way and like, you know?
So you're saying the culture sexualized a woman and then ignored her ability? That doesn't track.
It's weird because that so rarely happens.
That sounds unlikely.
Oh, man. Laughs and massages.
America. Sorry, what's that?
All right. Should we move to a slightly less dark Fargo?
Do we want to touch a little bit on Top of the Lake? Because did you rewatch any of it, or did you not get around to that?
Because it was. I actually did make a solid attempt, but it has vanished from Netflix, so I didn't.
The amount you, I think the difference in our ages is the amount you say I tried, but I was unable to watch that thing.
Yeah, It's, you know, we've talked about this some. Like, I can torrent things.
Yeah, but it's illegal and we shouldn't talk.
I don't feel great about it. And I don't really like just sitting and watching in front of a computer. I'd rather watch in front of a television
set.
And I think that's the thing that makes me old. Yeah.
Yes. Because I watch, I will literally sit 15 feet from my television watching something on a computer just because I happen to be moving around and don't mind it.
Yeah. So and keep in mind, this is a desktop computer where my torrent setup is too. So it's like I have to really kind of sit at a desk and actually watch it. It's not like a laptop or an iPad or something.
And it's all it's just a theoretical illegal torrent setup. It's not a literal.
Yes, that's correct.
It's a purely theoretical conversation.
Hypothetically. yeah. So anyway, I'm not torrenting the show because I don't do that sort of thing, and I don't believe in that kind of behavior.
Anyway, okay. The point is, this show, it's set in New Zealand, which in itself is an interesting change of pace from almost everything else you'll ever watch.
Yeah, I do, enjoy New Zealand. New Zealand, Australia set things.
Yeah,
I'm into.
I have been to New Zealand. It's incredible. Would recommend, 5 stars. Anyway, it's beautifully shot. It's got not exactly mystical, but sort of like a hippie level spiritual aspect to it. And some deeply interesting characters with the sort of character that you can feel, whether it was the actor or actress or whether it was it's written and will eventually come out. The backstories of all the characters on this show feel well written, even though we don't necessarily know them.
Yeah, I would agree.
You get the feeling of the weight of these people and who they are, even though we don't know the facts of all of their stories.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, the show does a good job of deepening, I think, too, as you see the, you know, as you kind of get more a little more into the mystery, some of the interior lives of these folks.
Yeah, and by the way, I'm about halfway through the season, but the second season hasn't actually come out yet. So the Nicole Kidman featured season 2, I think, comes out later this year. So we may actually be sort of leading up to it nicely.
All right. I will be looking forward to that. And hopefully it will reappear on Netflix because Torrent is bad.
So if you do catch up in the next couple weeks, we can circle back on that. But for those of you, there are some ways to watch it. I think you can rent it on Amazon, among other things. But it is dark and intense. It's not as timely and foreboding as The Handmaid's Tale, nor as sort of violently. Well, there's some issues. There's some deeply problematic stuff in Top of the Lake, but it is really well made, and I really love the acting performances so far, including a surprise visit from Holly Hunter, who I was not expecting.
Yeah, so
I love her, by the way.
She's always great. She is
always great.
Yeah,
a character actress who's had an entire career where it feels like every time she pops up, I'm just completely delighted.
Yeah, yeah, like you don't see her that often, and you don't usually expect it, but when you do, you're always like, all right.
She's always like a delightful surprise. Yeah, that's how I feel about Holly Hunter.
I would agree with that. All right. Well, you gave me an idea for a homework assignment today. We'll get into that a little bit later. I'm going to give you a range of choices today.
All right.
All right. So let's jump into Fargo because I feel like this was sort of a momentous episode in the Fargo canon.
I guess we got a spoil to have this conversation, I assume.
Yeah, this is I think at this point, if you have not seen the most recent episode of Fargo that aired last night as we taped this, you probably should skip ahead because we'll spoil the hell out of it.
Yeah, but it is – before we spoil the hell out of it quickly, it was really good. It's up to the standard, the high standard that this show has set. And also, I think, in a strange way, brought us around to why we're all here.
Yeah. I would very much like to hear from all those people who in episode 2 and episode 3 were like, this is formula, and we feel like we really know exactly how this is going to go, and where are you now? Because... Because, like, yes, there's still some of the archetypical characters, but this is not the same story we watched in season 2 or season 1.
This is the television version. What happened to Fargo at the beginning of season 3 is the television version of what happened to Isaiah Thomas the day after game 3 of the Celtics-Cavaliers series, when the Celtics won without him. And the idiot hot takes went straight to, are the Celtics better without Isaiah Thomas? And it's like, no, Nimrod. They won one game, and there are certain matchups where, sure, their defense is better without him, but you're overthinking it. Right. Let it happen. Right. The Celtics are not better without Isaiah Thomas. Fargo is still one of the best shows on television. Give it time.
Right. It's telling a story here, and we're a couple chapters in, so...
Right, it's hot takes. It really is. It's TV hot takes, and honestly, like, I think it's Skip Bayless level TV hot takes, and I'm kind of ashamed that that people I respect went with that attitude.
Yeah,
like it's a television show, and after one or two episodes, to be here's a weird story and insight into my personal life. One thing I do pretty regularly these days is get on a three-way phone call with two of my other nerdy friends from high school and play online Settlers of Catan for a couple hours at a time.
Okay. That is definitely the nerdiest sentence I've ever heard you utter.
Yeah, I mean, it's I think it's near the top of what would reasonably come out of my mouth. Although I'm a pretty nerdy guy.
That's a Ben Wyatt from Parks and Rec like level of
It's extreme. But I make no apologies. In any event, I have one friend who inevitably at some point in virtually every single game of Settlers of Catan that we play will mutter or in fact, sometimes loudly exclaim, well, there it is. I have no chance now. Well, now that X, Y, or Z thing happened, this is a waste of my f***ing time. I can't believe I f***ing, and he loses it. Mm-hmm. He'll often win those games. But
how hard do you eye roll whenever that thing comes out of his?
These are guys I go back friggin' 20 years with. I tell him right to his face he's being an asshole. The point is, that's just dumb. You should know better. Like, Settlers of Catan is a game with tremendous dice luck involved. And sometimes things take a sudden turn for the worse because five threes come up in the stretch of seven rolls for no explicable reason. But that's just luck, and it bounces and turns and twists, as does a season of Fargo. And to exclaim, well, we already see the formula, we basically know what's happening, two episodes into a show that has shown itself to be consistently one of the most creative and interesting narrative television shows we have, like, you're being dumb. You should have known you were being dumb at the time. There's really no excuse for it.
Yeah, like, trust in the people making these television shows. You know,
what if we do a TV trust rankings? I thought about this in between watching The Leftovers and watching Fargo and Better Call Saul, for that matter, this week. So let's just do a mini one. If I make you do a trust power rankings for Damon Lindelof, Vince Gilligan, and what's his face, who we were just talking about, Noah Hawley. How would you rank them?
I would go from first to third. I would go Gilligan, Hawley, and then Lindelof.
Totally fair. I think I would put Hawley first, and I would actually have Lindelof seventh of those three.
Of those three.
Because, like, here's the thing I realized on Sunday when I watched The Leftovers, and we don't have to talk too deeply about this week's episode, but I realized what and I think the way I watched it, blitzing it all over the last few weeks, obviously affected this perception. But for me, I had a whole season and a half of Lost to adjust to the fact that was made completely clear throughout that last season and a half, that, look, many of the answers you want are not coming. And for The Leftovers, it kind of hit me like a ton of bricks with this last episode that, like, oh, yeah, this is Damon Lindelof. A lot of these open threads will be left sitting on the floor in two episodes when this thing is over.
Oh, see, that's weird because I feel like The Leftovers is a show that pretty much wholly announced that they were not, like, they're not even interested in answering the mysteries. You know what I mean? Like, that I have had zero expectation that I was going to find out what happened in the sudden departure or why the sudden departure happened. Like, at no point.
Not
you know
even
what I
just
mean?
The why the but, well, not
I'm
even
not
just,
saying that's
I
the only mystery. I just holding up that one as an obvious one. I think some things will get answered, but the Leftovers is not a show. Like, it almost seemed a reaction to Lost in the sense of, like, here's a show and we're going to put this stuff out there and we're not even going to attempt to answer it. So maybe I don't feel the same way in terms of trust. To me, I look at Lindelof as just – yeah, the ending of Lost was a letdown and he let that down.
There are a couple seasons that had some pacing problems.
And that's it. Like, other than that, I have a lot of trust in him. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. Look, I mean, if he's seventh, like, that's still pretty good. You know what I mean? I'm not. Yeah. We're talking about all stars, right? We're comparing all stars here. So I'm not dissing. And it's a choice on his part.
But I trust him way more than, say, Ryan Murphy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Sure. Agreed.
Who's got whole television shows I'm not interested in.
I had no doubt that Noah Hawley was going to deliver another interesting and bizarre season of television from the start of Fargo. And the quality of the acting performances that we got in those first two episodes, which were a lot of exposition, assured me even more so that it would be excellent. But I'm just saying, I am confident that at the end of Fargo, everything will be brought around and together in a way that satisfies me deeply. And I'm pretty confident of the same thing as it regards Better Call Saul. By the same token, and so maybe it's just as trustworthy, I'm just trusting him to do something I'm not super excited for. I feel like I know Damon Lindelof is going to leave me in a tizzy at the end of The Leftovers. I'm gonna be like a little confused and upset, but I think that's probably part of his goal, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm excited for the end of The Leftovers. I think
it's not that I'm not excited. Yeah. I think it will be good. I just think it's going to be emotionally. It's going to leave me emotionally in a questionable place as opposed to like a satisfied place.
but that's kind of what that show is, right?
Agreed. You know what I mean? Agreed. Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. Maybe trust is the wrong word because I do trust it'll do that. Yeah. It's just a weird place to end up.
Yeah. But I'm like, I don't know if desperate's the right word, but I'm fascinated. Maybe fascinated is a better word too.
Yeah.
To see where it all ends up. Because this is
picking up steam to something.
And it's a show more so than any other that could just go anywhere. You know what I mean? Like, there's this sort of balls out daring to it of, you know, these guys are willing to try things. And, you know, I know they've had this sort of end game in mind. And that's part of the reason why they were able to do this, you know, slightly abbreviated season. And, you know, I can't wait to see where that is.
Yeah, no question. Back to Fargo. Now we'll spoil it. We gave people plenty of – hopefully people didn't skip through our whole Leftovers conversation.
So he has skipped through. They landed right here when we spoil it now.
All right. Okay. Now we're really going to spoil Fargo, so caveat emptor. But let's just go right to it. How did it leave you feeling when Emmett killed Ray?
I didn't love it.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I mean, it's very Fargo, so it does fit within the thing. But it was, you know, once they started fighting over the thing, I sort of saw it coming. You know what
right.
I mean?
Somebody, it seemed like someone was going to die yeah. when they started getting physical.
Do you think Ewan McGregor is relieved that he's now going to only have to play one dude?
No, I don't think he has struggled playing two dudes at all. I think he's struggled with the accent, but yeah. whatever.
No, yes, I think he's done a great job delineating the two personalities of to the point where they can have a fight really in a murder scene against each other, and it's you know what I mean, like
totally.
You're
enough
not even
so
thinking
that you
about
really
it.
Really didn't after one or two episodes, I didn't think all that much about the fact that it was played by the same guy.
Yeah.
I thought of them pretty distinctly as characters.
Yeah, and that is certainly a credit to him.
Yeah, he's been really good, I think, and I just love Mary Elizabeth Winstead. So my hope is that, you know, the death of Ray does not push her to the side. I think as an
engine of plot, I think it's fantastic, right? Because there's so many ways that you can go with it, and it really is just going to amp things up in terms of the level to which Emmett is like dug in.
It feels like we're headed downhill now, right?
Right.
Like we've been taking the roller coaster up the twisty hill, and now we're like teetering at the top, and the murder is the sort of drop point, you know?
Yep.
The roller coaster just headed down, and things are inevitably going to start happening at a faster pace now. The heat is on, so to speak. We see Carrie Coon, and by the way, watching her in these two different roles each week.
Yep.
God, she's so good.
Yep.
It's astounding.
To borrow a phrase from Tony Kornheiser, I believe I had that.
You did have that.
She's
great. I mean, she's playing in The Leftovers, this desperate, and I don't know if we've seen the last of her. I hope not. But she's playing this desperate, deeply disturbed and confused character.
Yeah. I don't think we've seen the last of her, by the way, because of that flash forward. I think you're going to get some more of her in Leftovers, because we're going to get to that point somehow. You know what I mean?
Right. Theoretically.
Yeah.
I hope you're right. But again, the like deep core of the character is this broken woman who lost everything, and all her attempts to replace the things she's lost seem to have gone to hell. Right? She's completely falling apart. And in Fargo, she's playing this in many ways in an equally fraught situation, playing this woman whose core is so deeply bright and self-confident and just no worries, I'll handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I don't know, any actor can do different things and have different surface emotions and behave different ways for different parts. But the depth with which the core of her person seems to change between Sunday and Wednesday is just remarkable to me.
Yeah, although I do think that there is a core of that in her Leftovers character, when she kind of puts on her agent hat, right, and needs to doggedly pursue someone and is completely unafraid to piss people off. Like, she does that I know who I am thing very well
right.
in both characters.
But she's still, like, she's a dark person, and this policewoman is a light person.
Yes, agreed. I would watch a whole show of her interrogating people as either
God.
Character, to be honest.
Like, that's so true. She has this gleam in her eye when she's in the scene. That scene with Ewan McGregor and Varga, whose name I forget as an actor, but he's very good.
David Thewlis, I believe is his name.
Yeah. And Carrie Coon with the other detective just sitting on the couch, confused, trying to figure out what's going on. The way Carrie Coon goes back and forth, and she has these throwaway lines at Varga after he butts in each time.
Yep.
Like, she challenges him every time, and they're kind of fencing while she's still interrogating Ewan McGregor, and he's stuttering over everything. It was such an awesome scene.
Yep. He's realizing how in over his head is he is.
Right.
Thewlis's character is Varga, right? Is he's at first kind of thinking like, whatever, here's a cop that I'm just going to beat around like I'm beating around everyone else in this town full of yokels, right? And then kind of realizing that she's giving it back to him, and then they have to play, and like all of that's going on at the same time, and it's, yeah, it really is a great scene. Well written.
Yeah, it's,
well,
you see him realize like, oh, this yokel has teeth, you know? And and then that's reinforced by him sort of trying to look into her afterwards. Just everything about this show is so well executed, and I'm just, this is why I think I would put Holly first, is I have no doubt that as we ride the hill down the roller coaster, like, we're going to reach a beautifully, probably thrilling and certainly satisfying finish.
You know, I would agree with that.
Every confidence he's going to deliver us to the station.
I have a lot of confidence with him, and you know, the answer to this question probably really should have been, you know, 1 and 1A. But yeah. the reason that I have Gilligan
gets no shade
at one is because you're Breaking Bad was to me the best example of just a perfectly paced show that started out from episode one as great and constantly tightened the noose over, what was it, 6 seasons? And got better every season, which is, you know, we haven't seen Holly pull that feat off yet.
No. He hasn't really made a show of that nature. We'll see how Legion develops.
Right. And you know, then to follow that up with Saul, you know, in some ways a greater degree of difficulty of trying to come back and do that again with a spinoff. I mean, who's done that, right? So and he's made that a rich and engrossing role, and it doesn't, you know, maybe it doesn't quite have the same expert pacing. There are episodes of Saul that, you know, may lag a little bit more than others, but the continued character development and just the sense that I have that he knows where he's going with these people and this whole world. Like, yeah, I'm just like, you know, swaddle me and carry me in your arms. I'm ready to roll wherever you want to take me. So, that to me is why Gilligan is number one. It's no shade at Holly at all. Like, I have complete confidence in both of them, but Gilligan has taken me to the promised land. And so I'm riding with him.
That's fair. Completely fair. Can't argue with the thing you just said. There may be some recency bias given Legion and Fargo. I'm all in right now.
Yeah. Holly's great. And visually, there's no one better. As great as the Leftovers is a really great visual show, there's some shout out to DPs, man. Because there's some beautiful television being made right now. Handmaid's Tale looks really great too, in the midst of all of that other stuff that it's doing, I think.
No question. By the way, on the subject of Noah Hawley, my mother recommended to me, and I will now recommend to the world, Noah Hawley was on Fresh Air. Dave Davies was in for Terry Gross, so it was not a Terry Gross interview, but there was some really good stuff with Noah Hawley about Fargo and Legion, including with sound bites of both shows mixed in. So if you're a podcast person who's into Noah Hawley, would recommend.
All right. Yeah, because definitely Fresh Air needs some more plugs.
I'm just saying, if you're it's a really good Noah Hawley interview. It was super interesting. He's an interesting guy. Also, I forgot, or maybe I never realized, did you know Rachel Keller's character's name in – I mean, I knew her first name, but did you know her full name in in Legion?
No. You know what? As I've gotten older, though, I'm like, it's hard enough for me to, like, I just, names are, I have a problem with names now.
I do too, but I asked because her name is Syd Barrett.
Oh, you know what? I did know that. I did know that, actually. Now that you say it. And even that I couldn't remember, so that's terrible.
Old man.
Yeah, like, it's funny, you know, I listened to Simmons on his podcast forever talking about his dad, and then watched him sort of lose the ability to retain names, and now it's happening to me. It's depressing.
Yeah, it happens to me too. I hope I'm never like him with the pronunciations, though.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, because that does happen to people I know too, where you just can't, you cannot internalize a pronunciation for whatever reason.
I can still read 100% of the ingredients in a Blue Apron menu, so I feel good about that at least.
Yeah, it's important for you to be able to say them when you record your Instagram story about your meal.
That's correct. Better way to cook. I should wait till they're paying us before I start doing
that. You should definitely wait till they're paying us, even though we're both using the service.
All right, should we? Do you want to jump into Saul? Do we need to talk about this week's Saul, or should we move on to music and homework?
What about the movie?
Oh, that's right. We went to a movie.
Yeah, I think we better put Saul off a week again. But I gotta say, this show is just picking up pace. It's better and better every week.
Yeah. Look, Saul's always a good watch. If you know, come on. All right, so Guardians of the Galaxy. Good watch is an interesting phrase here, I feel like, because if you're asking me, like, what was my opinion on the movie, like, watchable is definitely one of the first words that would come up. But I'd say the second, for me at least, was either rote or formula. How did you feel?
I don't know. Is two formula? I think they did fall victim a little bit to play the hits of the first movie.
Yeah, I feel like, yes, it was like, look, we have these people, certain number of wisecracks, a gigantic helping of 70s songs, the world's going to be destroyed, action. Yeah, and go. Like, that's the movie. And, like, it's pleasant. But it's like, I felt like I knew all the beats. There was zero tension to me in any of it, and it was just like, okay, well, am I gonna laugh at Baby Groot or not? And sometimes
you
I did, and sometimes
though, right?
I did. It's
so
not it's
I
not
agree.
Without charms, but it wasn't like it's so empty, and I'm never gonna remember any of it. You know what I mean?
How did but you didn't feel that way about the first one, right?
Yeah, the first one I feel like, yeah, I mean, because obviously you hadn't seen it yet, so,
right? That's
so
what I'm saying.
You can't really say there's a lot of formula, and my bar was very low. You know, I watched it on a plane.
I know.
I was like, all right, I'll watch this. You know what I mean?
This is a classic Hollywood thing where, and this is probably the best version of it because they're talented people involved, and it was super watchable and enjoyable. And I probably enjoyed it more than you do because I enjoy these types of movies more than you do, but. Generally, everything you're saying is true, and I think it's a classic Hollywood scenario in that they failed to learn from the actual lesson. Frankly, it's a classic corporate scenario. They failed to learn from the actual lesson of the first movie, which was be original, be different, be interesting. And yeah, be funny and have Chris Pratt and Zoe Saldana and Baby Groot or Giant Groot, or what have you. Do all those things, but be original, be interesting, have something new to bring to the table.
Yep.
And this movie didn't do any of those things.
I mean, the movie's ostensibly about family, right? And I don't know that, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know that these, like, the character development served that. You know what I mean? Like, these people were mostly a collection of wisecracks until at one point it kind of became like, well, we can make fun of each other, but you guys can't because we're a family. You know? And, like, and that was it. That was the bonds of family. And so to have the whole movie sort of turn on these guys and their love for each other, I like, it just didn't totally work for me.
You almost had to bring that with you from the first movie.
Yeah.
That was the one where they were sort of – their friendships were tested, as it were.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. It didn't feel at least to you like this is kind of an exercise in commerce?
Well, I mean, I think every major motion picture, every studio movie anyway, is essentially an exercise in commerce.
Sure, but like that commerce was at least part of the reason for being for this film. You know what I mean? Like we're all like we know a lot of you are going to see this is going to make a lot of money, so here we go.
But isn't that true? I mean, I think that's true of every single IP. That doesn't mean it's not a sincere effort to create a good film.
Yes. Yeah. No, like, I agree with that. It doesn't pre-qualify you from making a good film. But when you don't throw enough stuff on top of it, you know, when you don't throw a good film on top of it, then it feels like, all right, well, you're selling me stuff. We didn't talk about Logan because I have not seen Logan.
Interesting. I'd be interested in your take on Logan.
All right.
I believe it might be on video now.
It probably is. I just comic books, man. Okay.
It's pretty different.
Yeah, I hear that. I hear that. And I, you know. All right, I'll check it out.
You sound so don't sound so excited. I just here's the reason I ask is again, I think the first Guardians of the Galaxy, which again I thought was original and wonderful, was I'm not sure it's fair to say the second one was any more of a money grab than the first one or than any other comic book movie that's come out in the last 5 years.
I guess, except they didn't really like this was like the expectation. The first Guardians of the Galaxy was not like we're going to make a bunch of money on this kind of movie, right? Like it was a low expectation Marvel film that turned out to be huge. So
okay, but they still spent however many millions of dollars to make this thing. Millions of people were going to see it.
And I think I'm just not super excited anymore by big budget special effects action set pieces.
I understand that.
I don't feel like they can do much for me that I haven't really seen, you know?
I understand that, and I'm not necessarily even criticizing that position that you've taken. I'm just saying I don't know that it's fair to say that this one is more of a cash grab because it's a sequel when we're talking about stuff that's all IP. That
it's not just because it's a sequel. It's because it's a sequel where they didn't really bother. Like the story, all of it, it just feels pretty secondary to let's put these people together you like, crack some jokes, and blow some stuff up.
I agree, but I see that
and set up the third one. You know what I mean?
I see that as an unfortunate failure more than as a nefarious design.
Yeah, maybe. I'm not sure it's important which is which, though. You know what I mean?
Well, no. I suppose in the grand scheme of things, it's not super important, but it matters to me.
So, yes or no, how excited are you for the third Guardians of the Galaxy?
You know, we'll see. I'm going to see it, but my expectations are definitely lower now.
Yeah.
And I would love if they do something that surprises me instead of making a third version of the same movie, just in the same way that when I go to see this year's Star Wars, I'm going to hope it's more than a nostalgia play to Empire Strikes Back.
Agreed.
You know, but that doesn't mean I didn't enjoy The Force Awakens.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this when it came out. I enjoyed The Force Awakens, but, like, the further I got from it, the less I enjoyed it.
Well, just the less noteworthy it seems, because it really seems like a tribute piece.
Yeah. So, and yeah. Now, you know, Empire is the best of the movies to me. So, like, if they make a tribute to Empire and it's sort of note for note, like, I'll still enjoy it. But, yeah, I'm going to be.
But it'll be disappointing.
It will be disappointing. And I'm sure I will enjoy it less the further I get away from it.
And that's probably how we'll feel about this Guardians movie.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, like I said, it's very watchable. Like, I didn't have a bad time.
No, I mean, and if you've seen the first one, you certainly know what you're in for. It's just you're not in for anything new.
Right. There you go. All right. I kind of got to get going. So let's just jump into homework.
Yeah.
Okay.
You said music earlier. I'm not even sure what you were talking about.
I was talking about something that we saw that was kind of floating around on Twitter yesterday, which was the idea.
We could save that game for next week.
All right. We'll save it for next week. And, you know, maybe stale by then. Or maybe we'll have time to think of better examples. I don't know. All right. So homework. I'm gonna throw three things at you, and I'll just let you pick which one you want to do. How's that?
Okay.
The first one I'm going to suggest is The Keepers, which I don't know, maybe you've heard about. It's the latest Netflix true crime documentary.
Oh. All right, what's the second one?
I mean, what I'll say about that is, like, you know, yeah, there's a murder, there's some sex abuse, you know. So given that we're watching some heavy stuff right now, I can understand if you want to hold off on that for till later.
You know, I've never watched any of those shows the podcasts or anything.
Never watched Making a Murderer.
I have no interest in real crime. Zero.
Yeah, I like real crime.
Unless it's like the OJ trial from 20 years ago.
All right.
And it's a narrative or like a documentary 20 years ago. I don't know. That stuff is just like, ugh. I don't want to sound like a naive snowflake, but like I don't want to watch sad stories about real people with my entertainment time.
Yeah, Rhino. I'm sorry, I'm just throwing out political insults now. I don't even have to apply.
Was I watching where – oh, my God. Do you watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
I don't. It's one of those things where I'm not like not against it, you know, because I'm a big Michael Schur fan in general.
Yeah, I think it's so funny. I watched a few behind.
You know, his shows in general, I think tend to take a couple episodes to find themselves. And I think first season, I just wasn't really feeling it. And I've heard it's been great. And I kind of just am like, well, you know, someday I'll go back and binge it.
I don't know. For me. I'm so in the bag for so many of the performers that sometimes it's hard for me to tell if it's really a good show. Mm. But like Andre Brower, God, I'm going brain dead on names. It's so funny since we had the name conversation. Sandberg, Chelsea Peretti, Joe Lotruglio, like these guys just make and gal. Or two or three make me laugh every time they come on the screen. So Terry Crews, God, I love Terry Crews. I'm sort of – I can't help myself with all of the performers who are on screen all the time. I just love it.
How did we even get to Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
Because there was a funny – you made me think of a joke.
Oh, gotcha.
Because there was a goofy joke on the last one where the dumb detectives are calling each other cuck,
just sort of
out of nowhere.
Can we? All right, so let's move on to some other choices, since I have a feeling you're not going to pick The Keepers. The second one is the one that I mentioned last week and that we haven't really talked about, which is I Love Dick, which would be the new Jill Soloway drama.
Right.
I'm going to watch that regardless, so if you want to check that out, that's cool. And then I'll throw
it's a drama. I thought it was I thought it was more of a comedy.
I think it's a, you know, dramedy. I think it's probably maybe a better way to put it.
Okay.
Kevin Bacon, Catherine Hahn,
sure.
Sex stuff. Apparently there's a lot of sex stuff. I don't know. I haven't seen the episodes yet, so maybe I'm talking about school.
I'm a huge Catherine Hahn fan, so.
So, and Transparent's fantastic.
That sounds good to me.
I like Jill Soloway. And then the third option I'll give you, since we brought up New Zealand earlier, have we talked about What We Do in the Shadows at any point?
Yeah, we did a whole thing about it. You made me watch it.
Oh, man. All right, so then you don't have that one. I guess it's going
to
be
When
does
the new one come out? Isn't there supposed to be a second one?
I think there is going to be another thing, yeah. So that's another New Zealand thing that I loved. I forgot that we talked about it because apparently I have no memory anymore.
Yeah. I don't. What We Do in the Shadows. I was almost sure I had heard.
I know there had been some talk about it. At least according to IMDb, it's not in production.
Yeah. As of 2016, it's apparently the sequel is called We're Wolves. Like we
Yeah, they're doing a Wolves movie. I do. That's exactly what it was. Yep.
Oh, it's okay. So he, the director, I had no idea. Apparently, the director is directed Thor Ragnarok. So this was waiting to go into production until that was done, I guess.
Damn, comic book movies still ruining my life.
At least I am excited for Thor Ragnarok as a person who does enjoy the occasional comic book film. That one looks good.
At least according to Wikipedia, they're also developing a spin-off procedural comedy series based on the Cops.
Oh my!
Yeah.
Well, we could have a lot of good stuff coming from the other land down under this year,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, you've seen it all over the place. Good times.
Top of the Lake, while we're here, I'll just check because I know I saw it was coming out this year. Oh, it's premiering at Cannes. Or did premiere at Cannes? When is Cannes?
I think it just happened. There's that's a pronunciation thing, right? Is it Cannes? Is it Cannes?
I think it's probably Cannes.
Yeah, that seems more French.
If we were going
it?
To pronounce it correctly. Top of the Lake, China Girl. It's 6-hour miniseries.
All right. Well, I'll be looking forward to that as well. You got anything you got to assign? Because I do got to get the hell out of here.
No. Let's go with the thing you said.
All right. Next week we will love Dick.
Right. Yep. Right. Cool. Yeah. Let's love Dick. Never mind. Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The lights out. Butter's getting hard, the eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor, have yourself a tremendous evening.